D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined as we are every Wednesday at noon by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Hutton, after we get off with you, we are going to have a discussion. Do you know what was 15 years ago yesterday?
Oh, no, I don't.
The decision. LeBron James's decision was 15 years ago yesterday, which is just crazy to say aloud. I went back and watched it this morning, and I'll share my thoughts on it in a little bit. But
That's when he became the villain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was his villain origin story, wearing that oversized gingham plaid shirt and those baggy jeans.
And 15 years later, Jim Gray is on the Brady podcast.
There we go.
But
how about that?
The question I have for you, and this is the question that we're going to toss around later this hour, is how do you think the decision altered the landscape of professional sports?
Well, it altered the landscape of the NBA for the super team. That alone changed the perception for me of the league, because you started to have all these different teams. You were starting to see it anyway, but LeBron, that solidified the argument. That maybe it didn't solidify anything. It added more gasoline to the argument of if you're Jordan or LeBron. You know, Michael Jordan would have never done this with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. He would never, you know. That whole thing, it was ring chasing. It was a league that became tent pole organizations instead of spreading out the championships like we've seen recently, by the way, in the league. And I think for sports itself, it became more, it was already drama, but it really became more about the drama off the court. And how long can we make this an episodic series than it did, you know, let's do it all on behalf of my teammates kind of thing. That was behind the scenes. It's like NIL. It was going on, but we saw how the sausage was made, and LeBron milked it for all it was worth. And it turns out we were glued to the TV that day, but whenever we turned it off, we weren't that impressed.
It is crazy to remember the fact that we were glued to the TV for the decision. People were piling into bars. I remember watching a lot of local Cleveland news following the decision.
Yep.
Talking to fans who were crying in the bar after LeBron James bolted on Cleveland, and people were burning jerseys and that whole thing. So
it was the ultimate branding moment. You know, the brand was already there, but we were watching because of the brand of King James. You know, it went from King James to LeBron. You know, King James was the anointed one from high school. I was watching him in high school, high school basketball, and then it went from that to put it all together and just go win and dominate, and it became the villain. Jordan became the villain for me whenever Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal got together. And in Nashville, in McMinnville, we were watching a little bit of the Orlando Magic more than just the Chicago Bulls. And in this case, it went from LeBron's in Cleveland to LeBron's in Miami. Let's see what happens with the Spurs.
I remember when LeBron James was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he had to wear like patches over his tattoos when he played. Do you remember that? Like, that's how far back you have to go. They look like Band-Aids all over his arms because he had to cover his tattoos. Switching gears to the Titans, yesterday, Jeremy Fowler put out his list with the help of league executives and scouts and coaches and such of the top defensive tackles in the NFL. And Jeffrey Simmons maintained his number four spot from a year ago. And what I found fascinating about it, Hutton, was the reaction locally, because we had a lot of people text in saying Jeffrey Simmons should be nowhere near the top 10 on this list. But football people still believe him to be a top five defensive tackle in the NFL. Where do you think that disconnect is between league people and Titans fans on the value and ranking league-wide of Jeffrey Simmons?
Well, we've seen Jeffrey Simmons up close as a community, as a fan base, as a media, be at a very high, play at a very high level, right? It was contract year. And we've seen how things have gone since then. We have been told that the leader is there. I don't know if we've seen the full leader ascend to grab the brass ring, so to speak. But on the field, he's as consistent as what the Titans have. It also shows you that if the trade value were there, the talk was in the draft, how many players are truly hold value for trade assets? He was at the top of the list, and he remains there. Do you have handy the top 10? Can you give me like 5, 6, 7, those players, those defensive tackles?
If you give me just a moment, I can do that.
Because I'm not arguing that he's top 10. He's absolutely top 10 player. I want to know who he ranked behind Jeffrey Simmons. Because, look, here's the deal. Right now, it's Jeffrey Simmons. And I think the fan base viewed him as Big Jeff, the player that's dominant. And we're not seeing the pass rush there. The defensive line has not been good. You know, he has the comments about no one runs on the Titans, and then they give up 200-plus yards. I mean, it was bad. So, yeah, it's recency bias there on the reaction. But it's fair because it's been the production versus the production. And he set the bar, and it's a compliment to him, by the way, to expect that the bar be reset if you're that dominant of a player and you're paid the way he was.
So here are the defensive tackles who came in after Jeffrey Simmons on this list. Quinnen Williams of the Jets at 5. Leonard Williams
coming off a great year.
Leonard Williams of the Seahawks at 6. Nnamdi Matabike of the Ravens at 7. DeForest Buckner of the Colts at 8. Vita Vea of the Buccaneers at 9. And Cameron Hayward of the Steelers at 10.
See, I'm putting him ahead of pretty much everybody, but you've got the guy, let's see, you got Quinnen Williams, and then you have the other Seattle player. Leonard Williams, thank you. They're coming off of really solid seasons. So, if you're buying into Jeffrey Simmons, you're saying that he's going to get closer to where he was, not what he has just been.
Now, speaking of buying, we were having a discussion and doing an exercise with individuals that we would buy and sell on offense and on defense. But for the sake of the argument, which guy as a whole you would buy and which guy as a whole would you sell?
Okay. Am I doing this for a year? Like right now?
Like right now, predicting moving forward this upcoming season.
Okay. So if this is a stock market, am I doing offense and defense?
Yes.
Yes.
I have to buy Cam Ward. This is the lowest stock price I'm going to get on him. Hmm. Think about his coverage in the draft. You were talking about a number one overall pick at quarterback and the buzz around it. I'm getting the lowest price I'll ever see on a quarterback for an NFL franchise. So I'm taking Cam Ward, and I think the price is a little high for Calvin Ridley. Hmm. I do. I think that the price tag would be as high as it's going to be for Calvin Ridley with the Titans right now, because he's the only guy they have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
but
I,
that
I think
could
I would,
also
I,
mean that his price
continue to rise.
Yeah.
Yes. But I think a lot of people would choose Calvin Ridley. Mm-hmm. I'll take the quarterback over the receiver for this exercise, and I'll take, the collection of the group more than I will just one player, because I don't know if, the season is going to go all that great for as a whole for Cam Ward. But I do think we see a player that improves, and I like what I've seen and what I've heard from Ward so far this offseason. So, again, I'll buy into quarterback just because I think that the value is not going to be much lower than what it is. And I'll sell on Ridley just because it's got to be more than just one player dialed in for the production. The other player I would consider is J.C. Latham, moving back to right tackle.
Selling or buying?
Buying.
Okay.
At right tackle. But, they've sold on him at left tackle. Now, on defense, I Legarius Sneed would be the one I'm selling because I don't even know if the guy's going to play. But I mean, if we're going stock price, can the price be lower on Jeffrey Simmons right now locally than what it is? I don't think it can.
But I think if you're talking about nationally, his stock is still high. Based upon what the execs have said about him, they ranked him fourth. So that's a high stock that, you know, is he going to get any higher?
Well, I think if he's not going to be pissed off for greatness this season, I don't know when he would be. You know, is the Grizzly going to show up? Is the Grizzly Bear going to show up? You had Tavondre Sweat playing right next to him, but throughout Tavondre Sweat's career, he's had a ton of quarterback pressures, not many sacks. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not all about the sacks. You can get off the field on third down through a quarterback pressure. So, I mean, that's good. But in terms of just soaring and making some money on my investment, I'm either going to go with one of the young corners, or I'm taking Jeffrey Simmons in the middle of the defensive line. I don't know anything else about the stock price on the other players other than just let's throw some coins out there and see what happens. I don't understand. So if I don't invest in Bitcoin because I can't explain it to you in one sentence.
Yeah, me either.
I can't explain the other players on defense to you in one sentence. Like on whether why you should buy or sell, because we have not seen it yet as a collective group. There's a lot of youth there. So given that and the unknown factors of what we're going to see from a pass rush, I think my only investment could be Jeffrey Simmons and hoping that he, you know, plays more like the all pro Jeffrey Simmons than the guy who is we're talking about more than is he going to be a leader or not? I just want him to go out there and ball out. And I think that's what Jeffrey Simmons can do. Just go play. Mm-hmm. I want him to just go play. And when that guy shows up, it's a good thing for the Titans defense.
Now, let me switch sports quickly, and I'm pass it over to Willie. Basketball, the NBA. There hasn't been, you know, there was a little buzz about Memphis, and, you know, it comes out players. There are players that have said they would not want to play in Memphis. I don't live in Memphis. Every city has their problems. But do you look at this as the NBA may take a look at, you know, Memphis as a organization there and potentially, you know, wanting to move it? Now, if they move, it's going to take a lot. But I'm just saying, if you have players, and every player may not think this way. The guys in Memphis don't think that way. They're there. But if you have more players coming out saying, man, I don't want to, that's not a place that I want to go. Should the NBA do something about that?
Okay, let me be.
And I'm just asking a question. I'm not advocating for the Grizzlies to leave Memphis, but, you know, eventually it's going to come up again.
There's a bigger picture discussion to have with this, and I'll bring that up last because I think that's a more serious one. But honestly, I think a lot of this from the players' perspective, the Grizzlies don't stay over or they don't fly out early in certain of those popular cities in the NBA. Hmm. Players want to do that. They remember how they don't do that anymore because of Ja?
Yeah.
They don't go to LA early or stay after. I mean, there's certain cities where they just avoid what could happen, you know, just for making sure that everybody's good. You know, if you're going to some of the other markets that no one wants to stay over in, Memphis is staying over there. They're all knows. You know, nobody wants to stay over in Salt Lake. But, you know, they'll fly out of LA early and get to Salt Lake for an extra night. Because of, you know, that was the NBA stepping in with Ja Morant from a year and a half, 2 years ago. The more serious one would be instead of the NBA wanting to move out, the NBA should invest and try to actually change the culture that everyone's talking about. Be a league that wants to invest in a city and make it better. Are the Pistons moving out of Detroit? No.
They moved back to Detroit. Because they were out in Auburn Hills, yeah.
So invest in Memphis and actually be a part of the change instead of the reason why you're looking for a way to tap out. And by the way, I went to a Grizzlies game this past year to see the Knicks. It's not like they don't have a following. I mean, the arena is fun, but outside of the arena, you want to go back to your hotel. You do. And that's literally right outside of the arena. So be a league that wants to help be a part of the reason why you start to see things turn the other way. Then, oh, we're getting out of here because it's bad and it's going to be worse. This is their opportunity. I would hope that they would look on that side of the thing than the other. I would look for a Penny Hardaway type guy. Mm-hmm. Penny Hardaway loves the city of Memphis, loves it. And he's trying to be a part of the reason why, you know, you look on some of the reasons why it can be better, not worse. Mm-hmm. And I would look for those type of players. Unfortunately, you just can't do that with Ja Morant. And that's unfortunate because he was right there, Mace, to the next level.
He was ready to be the face of the NBA.
Powerade had just signed him to a deal, the first player that they had signed as an endorser in like 15 years. It was Ja Morant, like $100 million plus deal. Just done that whenever all that stuff went off. So, unfortunately, it's not going to get back to that. Ja Morant's going to play the villain. You know, he's saying that everyone's out to get him. Well, that's not the face of what I'm talking about here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be something else. And instead of the player, it can be the league and embracing and investing in the city itself behind the scenes. You don't have to do everything publicly, but just make sure that you embrace what you're trying to leave. If that's the rumor.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. And
that would be mine. Like instead of kicking people out or wanting to leave, I would try to make sure people want to come and stay.
Another sort of big picture question here for you. You got me. We were talking about markets and attractiveness.
Yeah.
One thing that gets talked about a lot in the NHL, and it's become a common thing to the point where it's not being adjusted in this new CBA they're about to ratify, but it got some heavy discussion, and that is the state income tax of every city. Yeah. And the perceived advantage. And I'm curious if you ever thought, why do we never hear it? I mean, never for other sports. Like, wouldn't you think if it's a thing in hockey, and it is, we just had, for example, Nick Perbix, who was on with us. You know, he's not a high-end free agent, but he came from Tampa. He signed with Nashville. And he admitted that he did consider that. And in a perfect world, you want to keep more of your money. It's a fact. Like, it's not disputed. But you never hear it in the NBA, MLB, or the NFL.
I don't hear about it in the NBA. That kind of ruins my point I was going to make. I was going to say, like, is it the length of the season? Because in the NFL, you're taxed in every state that you play in. Just no different than any player. Is it because of how many home games you get in Tennessee?
Well, I think it's just your residency. Right. If you, I guess maybe.
Well, it is like the players, just talking with like Logan Ryan and Delaney before, and Mace, you can tell me this.
Mm-hmm.
Were you taxed on every state that you played in?
Yeah, because what happened was in Cincinnati was one of the last teams. They introduced what they called, I think it was an entertainer's tax or something, and it was. You know, because entertainers were coming in and they were not getting taxed on the money. They had a lot of people, especially sports teams, coming in. So they added in was essentially a performance tax or entertainer's tax. So all states do it now, whether you are a state. Because I'm sure Tennessee, when people come in here to play, they tax you for playing here. So just because you don't have a state tax doesn't mean that state is not going to tax you when you come to play.
But isn't that separate from what we're
talking
about? Yeah,
that's separate.
Yeah.
It tells you I'm in communications, not math here. You know, I'm not a mathematician, but they said like they were taxed. They had to file based on, you know, different states that they play in. So anytime that they got like Florida or, you know, saying like they were cool with that, you know, they like playing Willie. I mean, to your point, if that's you're playing Jacksonville, I mean, you're playing a few other states that would benefit you as a player. You do hear about it all the time in the NHL.
Well, teams negotiate.
I don't know.
They say, hey, look, the Florida Panthers have really done a great job of keeping guys where they can do the math, and the Predators have used it to their advantage. They say, well, $8 million in Tennessee is equivalent of $10 million in California, or pick a state, and certainly the Canadian markets. I think that's probably part of the answer, is the Canadian markets, you get taxed very heavily by living in Canada, and a lot of them are Canadian cities. So it has to do with your residence, I think. But I'm just curious why it's become such a big thing in hockey, but it never even gets a sniff of discussion for the other sports.
Mace, when you played...
Did it ever come up with you, Mace, at all? Did your agent ever say, hey, you know, if you're living in Tennessee, you're now moving to Baltimore or whatever, and now Maryland has this with state taxes. Did that ever become a part of anything?
Well, you knew, because it's not like... And I think we all got to understand, guys, a lot of guys can't pick where, like, they don't have like 10 places they could pick,
right,
and five of them are taxable and untaxed.
Yeah.
So, and if you are that guy, typically your team is trying to keep you and they're going to overpay for you. When I was a free agent, whether it was New England or Baltimore, I was going to get taxed. I was going to get a state tax. You know, I wasn't looking to go somewhere else at the time, and no one was looking to have me as a receiver that didn't have no state income tax. So I had to go with, you know, in the sense of that, you know, I had to go because there was no other option. So yeah, you talk about it and you realize the financial hit, you know, when you have to pay taxes or at the end of the year or, you know, or whatnot. So yeah, players talk about it, but I think they talk about it more now than they did then.
Is it
Mace, when you were paid, were you paid once every 17 weeks with the Titans, or did they spread it out? I felt like...
No, the Titans spread theirs out. The Titans was the first and the 15th. So guys got paid like a couple of months after the season was done, which it worked out for a lot of guys too.
Like through March.
You know, exactly. So it helps you budget. So that helped. But then the Baltimore Ravens, they paid you every week. So, you know, teams are – well, no, Baltimore went to every 2 weeks too, I believe. But some teams paid you every week, so that's how it went.
Is it as simple as hockey players in relation to baseball players and basketball players and football players don't make as much money, therefore the amount of taxes they have to pay doesn't really matter to them as much as it does for hockey players? Is it as simple as that?
Well, I would say that there's a high percentage of football players, that lower third of the league, that is they're not making that much, right? The league minimum, there's every team's got a number of players that are on the low end.
Exactly.
Right?
Majority of
your top players make more.
Majority of your team is on the lower end. That's what
now,
you want.
Now the NBA, that might be a stratosphere that, and even baseball, I think those salaries are quite a bit higher. Maybe it's not as big a deal for that. That's a fair point. On those two, for sure. But the NFL, I would think, I've never heard the Titans try to use that angle, like when they're trying to recruit a free agent. Maybe they do behind the scenes, and we just don't hear about it.
Yeah, there is the jock tax. You're right, Mace. I'm looking at it right now.
Mm-hmm.
AFC South is the most tax-friendly NFL division.
Hmm. Ah.
Looking at this on Google.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Three of the four teams play in states with no tax on regular income.
But which then you got to pay taxes.
That means
when
no
you perform
jock taxes
here.
On away games. So there you go.
It's certainly not equating to winning.
But
those
who come in, they have to pay the tax.
I'm
right?
sure yes. there's been. Yes. I'm sure there has been a study, and maybe I can search for it in my free time. With if there's a correlation between the teams that don't pay as much taxes or no state taxes and winning, like as you just said, the AFC South, the friendliest division in football when it comes to tax situations, clearly not translating to as many wins. And
sure, but in hockey, it's a thing. You would admit, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You had your whole Sun Belt thing.
Yes, that's why. That's why hockey is officially a Sun Belt sport now. But Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike.
Fascinating.
Yes, Jonathan.
That's
Hutton,
a good question, Willie.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us as he does every Wednesday on the program. Hutton, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, have a great rest of the week, guys.
You as well. Jonathan Hutton on the program, 615-737-1025. Maybe we'll pick up on this conversation because I did just find something that sort of breaks down the taxes specifically to NHL players. And maybe we can all take a tax class together. 615-737-1025. Today, come out to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and meet Nashville native and two-time IndyCar champion Joseph Newgarden from 5:30 to 7. Also, Big Joe Dubin will be on site for a special broadcast of Chasing Checkers from 6 to 7. So get out to Brewhouse South today and meet Joseph Newgarden and get signed up to win tickets to the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix.